Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of About Abroad, where it's my job to introduce you to people who have built amazing lives for themselves in various foreign corners of the globe. We're talking with expats and thought leaders about moving abroad, remote work, visas, and all the fun and practical knowledge that you need to know to follow in their footsteps. If you've ever dreamed of making a life for yourself overseas, maybe working remotely or embracing long-term travel, retiring or studying abroad, or even just taking a peek inside life beyond your borders, you've landed in the right place. This episode is brought to you by my friends over at My Expat Taxes. For my fellow Americans out there, we all know tax season is upon us. And for anyone who's ever had the pleasure of dealing with multiple tax agencies in multiple countries, you know this can be a challenging experience. That's why when it comes to dealing with anything tax related abroad, I always recommend hiring a pro to help you navigate this unknown space. In my experience, this not only saves you time and spares you from the unnecessary headaches, it also has literally saved me thousands of dollars in taxes over the years. So I am super excited to introduce you to My Expat Taxes, a true pro in this space that focuses 100% on U.S. expat taxes. Whether you're filing for 2023, catching up on back taxes, predicting a future tax obligation for a future move abroad, or just looking for some guidance, My Expat Taxes has your back with speedy and affordable online filing options and real human accountants to assist you as needed. Join the more than 16,000 other Americans living abroad who have used their services by visiting myexpattaxes.com via the link in the show notes. My guest today is Gianna Barrett. She is the founder of a marketing agency called First Page Strategy and is currently based out of Roatan in Honduras. She spent 6 years living in Belize before this and is originally from the U.S. So she walks us through what life is like living on the Caribbean islands in Belize and Honduras and shares a bit about the Caribbean vibe that we all know from afar, but rarely get a chance to live for the long term like she has. This was super fun. I love the places that she's called home. They're beautiful, full of lots of nature and great culture and a big, vibrant expat community, while also embracing a lot of what the locals have as well. Plus, a very friendly immigrant status and ability to come live and call these places home. So a lot to love. She shares it all here in this episode. Please help me in welcoming Gianna to About Abroad. You're currently in Roatan, but have just basically lived all over. And I'm so curious to find out more.
Yeah. So that's why I built my business marketing agency, so I could hire people that work remote all over the world, like you and like me. And so that's really the passion behind my business.
That's cool how that's kind of like the starting point. I think a lot of companies are like kind of going the other direction. They're like, we built this business, we had a brick and mortar set up, and now, okay, we got to figure out how to do this like remote thing. And people want to live all around the world. And we want to facilitate that, but we don't really know how. You sort of like started from the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah. I mean, I was interested in trying to convince my boss when I was a junior marketer at a tech company in Seattle back when I was, 26 or 25, I was trying to convince them to let me work remote because I wanted to live in San Francisco, but we were in Seattle. But I could do my whole job online. He said no, but I eventually moved to San Francisco. And then same thing, I went to Belize on a trip and I was like, you know what, I want to be traveling and I want to be in other countries. I want to like see the world and be able to do my work at the same time. And so I left my career in San Francisco to do that. Then I moved to Belize to start this company and build a remote agency.
What is the business? It's a marketing agency?
Yeah, First Page Strategy. We're a growth marketing agency. Started out with just me and like one other guy helping me out that I recruited over from a job that I was working with him at. And then now we're about 40 people working remotely across the globe. We were remote, obviously, before COVID. So I get a little bit annoyed when people are like, oh yeah, like it must be nice to build that business after COVID really allowed you to do that. But there were so many remote companies and people working remote before COVID. So it's just more forefront now, I guess. But yeah, so we've been remote since 2016.
Wow. You're a true
pioneer of that space then, because I mean, yeah, you're right. Like most companies, you know, kind of birth time in the remote setting was post 2019.
Yep, exactly. So we've been doing it for a little while. So it kind of helped us through all that. Obviously we were already like stable and set up to work remote from home.
That's cool. So you guys didn't really have much of like, did you feel pretty unimpacted by a lot of the world changes that took place, or was there still like pretty heavy impact on some level?
We were not impacted from a business level because our clients are mostly tech product led businesses that we do growth marketing for. And that industry, as we know, is rarely affected and really almost, you know, tripled, doubled, quadrupled during COVID just because everybody was online. And we saw like businesses like Zoom get massively popular and some of these tools we were already using, but it really did still affect all of our workers, like in a sense, because when you work from home, a lot of people, you know, they go to coffee shops or they go to co-working space, or there's a way to get, you get out of the house and you work from home all day, you get out of the house to spend time with your friends, family. But so there definitely was still like the mental health side of like affecting the people that worked for us, just feeling like they were stuck inside all day and didn't have any outlet to communicate or connectable. In fact, we weren't unaffected, but we just, our business and revenues just kept going.
That's a nice perk of remote work. Yeah, we actually experienced the same. I mean, we're, you know, similar. We're about 100 people in 35 different countries, and everybody, you know, and we've been doing that for about 15 years. And so when the pandemic hit, we thought like, okay, like we're pretty fortunate here. We can just keep on chugging along. Like we don't really need to adjust too much. But the one thing we really didn't account for was that everybody just kind of like leaned into work. That was their outlet for everything. Cause you're just everything. Like I was in a 3-month lockdown in Spain. Like you couldn't leave the house. And it was like, so I'm just going to work a lot. And then there was like major burnout later and people like isolation, mental health challenges. And it was a predictable wave in retrospect, but at the time we didn't do a great job like being proactive about it as a learning experience for sure.
Yeah. I think, well, all of us were just kind of trying to survive. Like we didn't know how to prepare ourselves at all for that. Right. But I talked to so many of the people that worked for First Page and my team members that, you know, were single and were home alone. And some of them didn't even have pets. And those were the people that I think struggled the most, that they were really isolated. We had someone in Australia who was on complete lockdown, couldn't like go out for more than 1 hour a day or something, exercise, couldn't leave like a certain mile radius around her house, and all her friends and family members were outside that radius. And so, yeah, but we did talk a lot. I think like as a founder, I'm really focused on compassion and empathy and having like a full first culture and talking to all the people that work for me and really getting to know what like ticks for them outside of the company and the business. And so just continuing to have those like check-in conversations, like, how are you doing? What's going on in your world? What's the pandemic like for you? Like, I think carried us through in some ways, but it was really difficult.
Yeah, that's so important to lead from the top down. And in that way, like for the team to feel that level of empathy from the founder is vital in those situations, I think. And I think that's like the only way that remote teams really made it through this pretty trying time in like any sane sort of way was having that sort of leadership. So yeah, kudos to you. That's awesome. I think it's funny about the dog you like pets you mentioned in Spain. I have a dog. I have a Siberian husky named Coda, and he became super famous during the lockdown because that was the only way you're allowed to just go for a walk was to take a dog out. So we had people like, hey, can we like rent your dog?
Oh my God, that's so great.
We it could have been very lucrative. I didn't take anybody up on that, but anyway, it's funny.
Yeah, I just talked about the other day because I have a rescue, and like I'm really passionate about people, you know, saving dogs that need homes. And so it was so cool. Like that was the really good that came out of the pandemic when shelters were short on dogs, were dying to adopt pets, but all of them had been adopted. I'd love to hear that. But I did the same thing. I have a rescue named Gigi. And I mean, I got stuck in the United States during the lockdown because the airports closed in Belize. And so for 8 months, so I was in the States with her, and we walked like an hour in the morning and an hour at night because I was at an Airbnb rental I have in Long Beach, California, and I didn't have any friends around. And so it was just me and my rescue dog walking 2 hours a day. And so, yeah, the dog walk thing during the pandemic definitely was my point of survival as well.
It's funny. I actually, one thing that I learned about halfway through the pandemic pandemic was that I didn't understand the so many rules in Spain, and they were changing constantly. And one of the things I didn't capture immediately was that there was, and I've wondered, like, did I just like purposefully kind of overlook this point? Like, what is it? Like, would you just like, you see something and you're like, ah, I'm gonna choose to not have seen that. So I don't know if I subconsciously did this, but there was a rule where you had like a radius around your apartment, like a very small radius, and you couldn't leave even for walking the dog, like 2 blocks or something like that. But I didn't see that. So I was, for the first couple of weeks, I was like going on these super long walks through the ghost town of Valencia, Spain, which is normally like a pretty thriving metropolis. And it was like totally dead at the time. And I'm like walking through this ghost town with my dog, just thinking like, man, this worked out pretty good with Coda. And then I found out like I'm breaking all kinds of laws. And so got restricted.
Oh, shoot.
That's wild. Did you end up doing most of the time during the pandemic back in the US, or were you in Belize at that time?
I did. No, in Belize, it was right in, like, hard to really think back. I think it was April timeframe, like hit in March, and they were closing the airports, the international airports. And it made me really nervous because my whole family, any connections, if I got sick, if I needed help, if I needed to go, you know, to healthcare, whatever, was in the US. And so once they told us that they were shutting the airports down, it was kind of like a lot of expats and their pets. I mean, I was at the airport that day with all my best friends. They were all with their dogs. Kind of everybody was leaving Belize to be able to get to the other side of the airport before it shut down. And so I, at the time, you know, lucked out because I had just bought in 2019 this little tiny Airbnb home that I rent out and kind of use as my US home base anytime I need to go back. And I just had that set up. And so I was able to go back there. And yeah, so I stayed there for 8 months during the pandemic, and because the airport closed or didn't open back up in Belize until October 2020. But I had a cat and like a house sitters at my house for 8 months. It was very bizarre. And I panicked, like being stuck on the other side of not being able to go home or, you know, take care of things. I also had a sailboat that was kind of like randomly floating and didn't have anybody, you know, taking care of it. And so I haven't really come back to the US much since then, because I got nervous about being, you know, just locked out for so long. And so when things were still a little bit iffy in 2021 and this year, I've, yes, stayed in Central America since that 8 month stint.
Oh man, I'm so curious. What was the initial attraction to, was it Central America or was it specifically Belize?
It was specifically Belize. I went on a vacation to Belize for about 10 days in August 2015. It just came at about the right time in my life. I had been in San Francisco for 6 years. I was not happy with my lifestyle or the lifestyle of city and the tech world and my career for the last 2 years of it. I was kind of looking for my next step. I wasn't, you know, I wanted to get out of San Francisco. I didn't really know strongly what US city was calling me. I was kind of looking at Atlanta, Colorado, Denver, New Orleans, but I went to on a vacation lease and I just like felt so great for those 10 days I was there, and a total shift in my mentality and attitude from when I was in San Francisco. And people were so nice. I was really super relaxed. We were warm. We were in the water. I just had a blast. And I came back and I was like, you know what? I want to feel like that every day of my life. Like, I don't want to live a life where I feel like I'm on vacation 2 weeks a year, and then the other 50 weeks a year, I'm just waiting for my next vacation. I'm like, I want to feel like you feel like you're on vacation every day. And how do I do that? At the time, I was stuck kind of in a situation at a startup that was doing really well. I had stock. They were going to, you know, they were considered a unicorn. I kind of felt like I couldn't leave that. But that situation dissolved itself in April of 2016. And I was like, okay, I checked all the boxes of what I needed to do to get out of the country and just made the leap. Like, I just quickly didn't even think about it. Called my parents. I was like, I'm going to Belize. Sold everything, set up a business, was like, I think I might just freelance. And then the agency thing kind of fell in my lap a couple months later. But yeah, so that's how I did it. Just kind of chasing like a feeling that a lifestyle I was not getting in the United States.
I can totally relate to so many things. Like, we have a ton of parallels between the path that we took. I'm pretty sure it was the exact same year. I think it was 2016 when I finally like ripped the Band-Aid off, left a really good situation at a company. It was like, I actually loved the company, loved the people, loved like most things about it, except I wanted more vacation time. I wanted exactly what you wanted. My thing was like Europe. Like, my wife and I were traveling to Europe a lot, but it was like, we'd go for 1 week and then we'd fly back and, you know, jet lagged and all, and like jump back into work on a Monday and do that once or twice a year. And that wasn't like filling the need. But anyway, ended up like, you know, leaving a what most would consider like a good situation behind, sold the house, all that. And like, we're like, okay, we're just doing this finally. And, you know, learned a lot along the way. But it's, I don't know, like yours is a bit unique story in and of itself, but also like how quickly, like kind of ripping the Band-Aid off and just going. And I think one of the really cool things that Belize offers, and you can tell me more because I don't really know all the details, but like it's possible for an American just to like move to Belize, right? Like you could do that in a month. You couldn't do that with Europe, for instance.
Yeah. You know, I always wonder, like, there's, as you know, I'm sure, and all the people you've talked to, and just knowing the kind of scene of people that leave the US or other countries that work abroad, you know, the pockets of that people go to. There's a huge location in Bali. There's tons of people that work in Portugal, Lisbon, pockets around the world. And like Central America is not really one of those pockets. And I'm always so baffled by it because it's the perfect location in terms of time zone. Like I'm on central time or mountain time zone now. We don't change. So I just switch back and forth between central and mountain. And so I'm in the middle of all the US time zones. So I can work in the US with US client, US employees with like zero interruption.
Wow.
And the internet is stable and great. I mean, we're in a year where like internet kind of problems might get them sometimes, but for the most part, I am able to Zoom all day, don't have an issue. There's no acute work remote place on the island I live on called Des. There's kind of those work remote resources. And yeah, so, and then again, like there's very little laws that are going to keep you out of here. I know that people struggle really kind of to make it work in certain European countries. And I think that's because they're just so much more developed and advanced. But in a lot of countries here, they're encouraging it, right? Because they want people to come down and purchase land and spend money and help the economies down here. And so, yeah, in Belize, it was just a situation where I had to go, you just have to go to immigration and stamp every 30 days. You have to pay, I think it started out at about 50 Belize dollars, 25 US started, and now 100 Belize dollars every month. But yeah, so I just stamped every 30 days. You have to go to immigration. You have to make sure you're not late. They do want you to abide by their laws. But I did that for about, I think, 18 months. And then finally, they told me, you know, we want you to have status. And to them, status means something deeper than just like someone on vacation stamping visa. They want you to have a work permit or a residency. And so I went through the work permit process. You just, you know, you can work with various brokers who will just kind of push it through quickly for, you know, a certain amount of money. So once you have a work permit, can stay in the country without stamping for a year. And you get benefits like being able to go through the short line at immigration when you come in and you're behind like two airplanes of tourists. And so, yeah. So then for my last 4 years there, I had
it. Wow. That's cool. And do you feel like it was sort of like in some countries, like for instance, I went and lived in Ecuador for a little while and it was kind of similar sort of thing. You could show up on a tourist visa for 3 months. And then after that, you basically just every 3 months had to go through this process of like paying a fee and filling out some papers. But it wasn't a question. It wasn't like you were applying for the extension. You were just doing the process. And did you feel like more or less that was the case in Belize? Or was it more of like you kind of worried about it every time? Like, I hope I get it.
No, it's definitely easier than, you know, my boyfriend is from Honduras and there's like, we've learned all the challenges that come with trying to get someone into the US. It's very different than that. But yeah, you don't, there was no stress or struggle. It was like, check all the boxes, fill out this application, you know, send a letter of recommendation. There's just a list of things you have to get done, pay the fee, and then signed, sealed, and delivered. There is no worry and stress about it. I mean, but I can't say like, I was someone that didn't have a criminal background, like they're checking police records and stuff like that. So I can't, you know, I was pretty much, and they have a certain extent of like, you have to have so much money in the bank, you have to be making much money, you know, kind of showing that you keep a job there yourself. Because one thing that you're not allowed to do, and I live in Honduras now, and same here, Belize and Honduras, they don't want you taking a job away from a local. And so you kind of have to prove that you can make your own income and you're not going to come and, you know, become a, in Belize, like there, nobody foreign could be a dive master because they want to preserve, like dive masters are local because that's a big, you know, job for locals. So I checked all the boxes in terms of like nothing was a red flag for them. So I can't say it would have been a bit harder if I was a red flag port, I guess.
Yeah. When we're speaking in like generalities around these visa things, like we do have to throw that caveat on there. Like if you're a criminal or if you don't have any money, then then yeah, you know, this yeah. might not apply to you.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. But Belize was a lot easier than where I'm at with Honduras. Yeah. I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Yeah. 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 I definitely want to get into both of them because I've actually never been to Honduras. I've been to Belize and fell in love with it and was also like all the reasons that you just mentioned, like the time zone thing, the close proximity, beautiful beaches. I fell in love with the keys, like the little islands out there. Where did you live in Belize?
Yeah, I lived on Ambergris Key, which is the biggest, largest. They kind of call it the New York of Belize. For me, it was a great transition because I was in San Francisco. You know, I was a city girl. I loved going out on the town and kind of checking out different bars and restaurants. And so San Pedro has just a ton of to offer in terms of like massive amounts of bars and restaurants and fun. And then it's about a half an hour away from Key Cocker, which is very popular with like the cheaper travel, backpack travel set of, there's a lot of Europeans that go to Key Cocker, and it's just a smaller and sleepier kind of, you know, not a lot of cars, still have sand roads and not as developed. So for me, it's like San Pedro was an obvious choice because all the things I felt like I needed, the services I needed to have to actually live my life are in San Pedro, where it's a little bit, you know, there's not a whole lot on Key Cocker, but both islands are beautiful. They're, you know, in the middle of the Caribbean. The water is shallow and blue. You can snorkel right off the shore. The people of Belize are, I think, what people talk about the most when they say that, you know, they've been to Belize and they love it. And I've heard people say that people are like some of the nicest in the whole world. And I really, truly not like, they are just so kind, so smiley. They'll joke with you. You know, English is the native language in Belize. Another reason why it's great for people that, you know, don't speak another language, which is many Americans, unfortunately. And I'm kind of one of those. I'm trying to learn Spanish now. But yeah, so I give, yeah, 10 gold stars.
Yeah. I mean, all those things I fell in love with as well. It was so easy. I loved the welcoming nature. Like I wasn't going there for a long-term stay, but knowing that the approach the country takes to like welcoming foreigners, you know, I'm just coming from the standpoint of being an American, but like as an American, I could just move there. I could come, I could pretty much stay as long as I wanted. They seemed to want me there and enjoy having me there. And I had like this, I remember having this amazing experience speaking to how kind people were. There was a guy working at our hotel, like doing maintenance and stuff. And I just happened to ask him, like, we want to go back. We were out on Key Cocker actually. And we asked like, yeah, we wanted to go like, you know, see some of the temples and stuff like in the back on the mainland. Like, do you know how we would do that? And he, like an hour later, he came up. He's like, hey, my uncle's going to pick you up back in Belize City tomorrow, take you on a tour. And like, legitimately, like we rode the boat back to Belize City, got in a car with this guy's uncle, and he drove us out to look at the temples. And we're like, what? This is amazing. like that. And he just brought us back. I mean, sure, we paid him and stuff. It was a business endeavor, but it was like so like familiar, and it just had a very unique vibe to it.
Yeah. So that is like, I mean, to me, I kind of just got goosebumps listening to you talk about that, because to me, that was absolutely life-changing. It changed my whole life to be in the culture and the community. I came from a city in the US where I felt very isolated. People are very transient. I lived in an apartment for 6 years. I did not really know my neighbors other than a hi and bye. I went to the same coffee shop, gym for 6 years, bar down the corner. I didn't really know people. So they're just like, US cities can be super isolating, and our culture is not friendly in terms of just like saying hi to people in the streets. I mean, I go back to California now, walk my dog, and I like say hi to people and they kind of divert their eyes. Like, I'm super sad about what I see with the American culture now that I've experienced another culture. But being in Belize, it was like I said, just life changing. People are so kind. They ask you about yourself all the time. They want to get to know you, Jen. They open up their home to you. They would recognize me everywhere I went. I had people stopping in the streets if my car broke down to carry like my bags and pick me up. And I just felt so supported as a single woman in Belize at every turn. Like, I was alone, but I was not alone, because I felt like there was people, if I was sick, I had people drive, you know, miles up the coast to drop off local remedy when you're sick, which is ginger and lime and garlic. And yeah, I just have so many examples of being really embraced and supported.
It does totally change your perspective, right? Like you grow up a certain way, you just kind of have like your normal is your normal. And then all of a sudden you're transplanted to another place where you see a new normal, and you're like, and you can take from the good and the bad, and you know, kind of piece together a new normality for yourself. And I think that's one of the most attractive things about really like long term, like living in a place for a long time. Like, you really get to absorb those nuances of life in another place. And I I don't know, it gives you a whole new fresh perspective.
Yeah, it really does. And that is why I am just absolutely obsessed with culture. Like, I'm fascinated by it. I love it. I felt like, you know, when I left Belize, I kind of had wrote a goodbye to some of my friends that I posted on social. And I talked about how it was like the most special experience of my life date to be let in so intimately into another culture. And just like learning the idiosyncrasies of like how they live and work and the jokes and, you know, what they do at Christmas time or all those little things was so cool experience, something so different from what I had done, but so similar in many ways, right? It really also to you that like the human experience is the same across so many cultures and so many countries. We're all kind of dealing with the same thing. So yeah, so I'm endlessly fascinated about learning about other
people. You and me both. That's a cool point too. So that leads me to believe like you were able to kind of integrate. And I'd always like to ask, I'm curious to know like what the vibe was like in terms of like, you know, the expat community versus the transient community versus the locals, and like how you as someone living there as a foreigner were able to like mix and mingle in those different spaces. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I think it can be challenging in some ways, but then like you'll be embraced and welcomed other ways. And I can only speak to the cultures that I've been a part of in Central America. But the trickiest part, I think, is that they see so many people coming. Like there's a lot of Americans or expats or Canadians or whatever country you're from that stay for a year. And so a lot of my friends were cautious and just kind of exhausted by letting people in, being best friends, saying bye to people over and over and over again. And kind of a lot of them had talked to me about that really like painful or heartbreak some ways. So it can take a lot to break into a local culture, I think, at least on these islands I've been a part of. But for me, I see a lot of expats that really are, you know, they come down and all they do is like hang out at expat business and they hang out in expat groups. And that at all was not at all what I was in. Of course, I wanted like you, I did have expat friends because you know, you connect with people that know the same culture that you do, right? Kind of do need that in another country. But I wasn't interested in leaving America. I was really interested in having like a really breaking in and learning as well. So it took some time. But yeah, I didn't, you know, matter where you're from or the color of your skin or who you are, or what country you're from. Like, I just wanted to get to know people that I felt were Greek like-minded or not like-minded as me, right? So I kind of went about that in a very way. And I wish that more expats that. And for me also, the biggest thing is I was really interested in supporting local business. And so I made sure to go to local Belizean restaurants, local Belizean bars. And when you do that and you like hype up their business, like I would go to like, you know, get a pedicure at a spa and like post about them on Instagram, like they really appreciated that. And so I made a lot of connections through like the business owners of the businesses I would frequent, I became friends with just because I was supporting their business.
Oh, that's such a cool way to contribute. And like while you're, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, two birds, one stone sort of thing. Like you're getting to experience the local culture, part of why you came there, and then also like supporting others. And I totally agree. Like it bothers me a little bit, like not on a personal level, but just like, I kind of hate it for people that they go abroad and they spend some time like living in a place, but they never really get to like know the true nature of the place because they surround themselves with people exactly like them. And I get it. That's comfortable and nice. And you do need that. You said that as well. Like it is nice to have that to lean on sometimes, but also like getting into to the place you're now calling home is such a vital part of the experience. And for some reason or another, some people just kind of miss out on that, I think. And I don't know, I'm getting better at like finding the balance. For me personally, it's getting important to like to have that group of expats or digital nomad types that are coming through, and like not like shun that completely, but also like ensure that I'm, you know, continuing to like integrate into the local area.
Yep. And I do think both those things are super important. Like I would never, I'm not interested in shunning my own culture, although I will say that once you live abroad, you kind of see like an outside perspective of how some Americans act. And I do have a hard time with that. But yeah, like having friends from back home, and when you have friends from where you're living, right, in the country that you're living, that's when you really truly get to experience the culture. Like there are so many cool things that I did that I would not have been able to experience if I did not have Belizean friends. You know, I had Belizean friends that took me on like kind of super secret island key tours on a boat where we spent the night on these little tiny keys. I wouldn't have done that unless I had a friend who was a captain who knew how to navigate the waters. I went to different cultural celebrations and saw how like Belizeans do baby showers or how Belizeans do Christmas. And it's totally different than what we do. And so I wouldn't have experienced those things if I wouldn't have had friends from from Belize.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And you were communicating in English primarily, or was there a mix of languages?
Yeah, English. And that is why it was a lot easier for me to connect on a deeper level. And I am struggling a little bit with that now that I'm in Honduras, where it's primarily Spanish speaking, because English is the first language of Belize. And so I am not able to connect as quickly with locals here as I was in Belize. That is a struggle. So yeah, like shared language goes a long way in terms of just integrating for quickly.
Yeah, that's such an advantage of Belize. Like, what a unique thing, right? Is it the official language or one of the official languages?
It's the official language. I mean, because they used to be British Honduras, right? So they were owned by the Brits they were independent only 40 years ago. And I know this, Belize is the same age as I am. So every year when they celebrate their independence, it's my birthday age. But yeah, so I can't remember who told me this stat one time, but it takes like 3 generations or something to fully unwind yourself from colonial ruling, right? So Belize is really young still in their independence. But yeah, so English is the official language. Most of the locals do Spanish. And then they also speak Creole, which is probably the unofficial first language, as Belizeans all speak Creole with each other and you as well. And a lot of them can switch back to like a non-Creole English, right? But so it's like a language country.
Right. That's wild, right? That's really interesting to think about. And the English being the official language, like you're like, oh, that's cool on the surface. That's nice. You know, we'll be able to communicate. But also like when you're thinking about being an expat, living abroad somewhere, like when paperwork, like official paperwork and stuff is in your native language, or like, you know, when you go to see a doctor or a bank, or, you know, like all those things get super complicated. Like I'm having to deal with like mechanic issues in France right now. And I'm like translating back and forth with Google Translate on my phone. Like when those kind of things go away, it makes the experience a lot nicer.
It does. Yeah. Yep. 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 And that's like, I'm definitely experiencing that now in Honduras. Yeah. Like your doctor's things, or even talking to a doctor has been frustrating for me. Because I have to like tell my boyfriend what's going wrong, and then he has to translate it to the doctor. And like, you know, I feel like some things are kind of lost in translation sometimes. So the language thing is a barrier in a lot of ways to making it a little bit difficult and kind of just exhausting to integrate into a new culture. So yeah, that's tricky.
We'll be right back to the show after a quick break for a note from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you in partnership with my friends over at Lamont & Co. If you're planning a retreat, offsite, or group gathering of any kind this year, I highly suggest tapping into their extensive knowledge and experience to help you find the best possible venue for your event. I work with Kim, who has become my trusted advisor when it comes to planning any event around the world, and she's literally saved me hundreds of hours of work and has located venues I never would have found on my own. She even provides me with budget breakdowns and cost estimates for each location I'm interested in, and negotiates contract terms on my behalf, all for free. If it sounds too good to be true, I thought the exact same thing at first, but I can assure you this is the real deal. Lamont is paid by the venues, not by you, so there's no cost, risk, or obligation here. So do yourself a favor and contact Lamont via the link in the show notes when you're planning your next group, retreat, offsite, or gathering. Before we dive back into the rest of the interview, I have a small favor to ask of the audience. If you are enjoying this episode and getting some value out of it, then please follow these very simple instructions. Step one, pick up your phone. I'll give you a second. Step two, leave a 5-star review for About Abroad. That's it. That's all I'm asking. It takes about 2 seconds. Of course, it is completely free to you, and it is the best possible way to support myself, the show, and everyone working on About Abroad behind the scenes. The funny thing is that there are thousands of people tuning into this show every single week, but we are very likely to only get a few reviews by industry standards, and reviews are the most impactful way that you can show support for the show. So if you have the time, please do so. And either way, I hope you enjoy the rest of this episode.
When did you make the transition to Roatan? And if you don't mind sharing, like, was there any particular reason, or was it just like personal, or any reason to get away from Belize?
No, not other than like the, you know, quintessential or like stereotypical love story, I guess. But now that I'm here, I do think that, you know, there was obviously in my mind, like, I'm a very intelligent woman. I wasn't going to like jump to somewhere that I didn't want to live for someone else if I find myself here, if it didn't work out. So I evaluated Roatan a lot against where I was living at in Belize and in Burgas. And I moved to Roatan a year ago. But yeah, to me, it just is superior in a lot of ways, just in how it's run and the development and where the development heading, the environmental impact thing, some cleanliness thing. So there's a lot of reasons that I had chosen this to be somewhere that I could like, okay, Belize was super fun and I loved it, had a great time, but do I actually want to like buy real estate there and become a full-time resident and like truly dig my heels in?
Interesting. Yeah. Could you, is it the infrastructure? Is it the politics?
It's all of it, honestly. It's somewhat sensitive because I don't want to, if anybody from Belize were listening, say things that would like hurt feelings or get people in trouble or anything. But yeah, it's just, if you think about all the reasons you would choose to live somewhere, from education to infrastructure to government to environment to food and healthcare, there's two big things I can say off the bat is there's multiple hospitals on this island and an international airport, and neither of those were on the island I was living at in Belize. So just like having an international airport and a hospital goes a long way, right, in terms of where I want to live. So yeah,
I can relate to that. I mean, one of the things I have loved about living in Valencia is like, I'm actually kind of like drawn to like smaller towns or even like villages, you might say. But like the thing about being in a place like Valencia is that like in 15 minutes, I can be from my doorstep in the center of the city and I can be sitting at the airport, and like in 45 minutes, I'm sitting at my gate, fly all across Europe. And like, that was a huge thing for me, like just being, having that international access and anything like that infrastructure is really important. And I think exceptionally so when you're in a foreign place, like you don't want to make it even more challenging on yourself, or maybe you do for a while, but after a while it can get a little bit exhausting.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a difference between like, am I here to work remote and, you know, have some fun for a couple years, and is there another place that calls my attention, versus I want to settle down, I want to buy something, you know, real estate or whatever, I want to build a family and a community here. Like, you're going to weigh different things, right? Because once I started kind of leaning towards the latter of like, where do I really want to settle into, I had a whole list of things that did not crop up when I was just leaving San Francisco to go to Belize. Not things I thought about, but I do think that people make the leap too quickly sometimes. And I'm just speaking to like the retirement expat. I see a lot of people just like, you know, we're in a Facebook group here where we'll ask questions to each other and just feel like, we're moving to Roatan, we've never been, should we live in the Sandy Bay or the West End neighborhood? And I'm like, never been? And you're trying to ask like a random people what neighborhood you should buy a house in? Like, maybe you should think a little bit further into like, why Roatan and where on Roatan, you know? So it's like, people are they're not very thoughtful about sometimes about where they're putting their life and their butts, I guess. But yeah, so I was pretty thoughtful about the reasons why Roatan stood out.
Interesting. Yeah. So what about, let's do like some basics on Roatan, because I feel like there might be some people listening who are like, I know Roatan, but like, I don't really know Roatan. So like, let's just like start from a little bit of the beginning, like Roatan's a part of Honduras, and let's go from there.
Yeah. So Roatan is one of the Bay Islands of Honduras. There's also Guanaja and Utila and some others. It's probably the most inhabited, largest, like where people, a lot of people do. It's really large. Like, I would say I can't give you exact miles to miles where I was living at in Belize and in Burgos Key, but it feels like it's 5+ times larger. Very large, like rock in the middle of the ocean near the Mesoamerican Reef. There's a bunch of different towns that people live in, you know, across the island. So you could live in one part of the island, you would still have all access to all like grocery stores and all restaurants and all that. Or you could live in another part. So it's like, feels large when you're moving to the island, but because there's lots of these on it. It is an international dive location. It's one of the main reasons I'm here. It's like one of those dream dive locations, I think, for a lot of people. Diving is a huge part of the culture here. There's dive shops everywhere and lots of divers. Yeah. And it's also a Caribbean island. So we're next to a reef, lots of snorkeling, lots of really cool water, lots of seafood, and just that whole Caribbean culture, lots of water, sports and shiz and beach bars and stuff like that. It's one of the lesser known islands. Like, a lot of times when I tell people that I live in Roatan, they're like, oh, where's that? Which, yeah, is really surprising. But then it allows this like kind of still untouched, not for crazy tourism, right? Like, tourism is high, but not as high as all the other islands. So it's still pretty affordable, becoming less so because I feel like people are discovering it, buying up real estate left and right. But yeah, it's a absolutely stunning place.
Yeah, that sounds so idyllic, because one of the things that's like the Caribbean's great, but a lot of times when you go to some of the islands, you think like, this is great for like traveling. You know, I love coming and spending a week or two here or something. But when you have the kind of infrastructure that you have there in Roatan mixed with all the greatness of the Caribbean, the water, the vibe. I mean, the Caribbean vibe is like world renowned. You don't like that, what are you doing with your life? I'm so obsessed. I love it. Like, it's just so vibrant and fun and like friendly.
People are,
you know,
happy. The music is amazing. The dancing, the food. Yeah, like everything about it. I will feel strongly that I will never leave the Caribbean. I love it.
Is there a time of, like, do you have like a rainy season or anything? Like, is there a bad time of year to be there?
Yeah. So it was quite different, which is so bizarre. What's really bizarre about Imbergus Key, Belize, the Keys in Belize, Caribbean Islands in Belize versus Caribbean Island Honduras. They're so close, like take a flight between them actually, which is how I originally came here. It's from Tropic Air from Belize to Roatan, 45-minute flight. They're very close in the water if you look on a map, but they're very different with their weather. And Belize was really like, the islands are hot and don't really get a relief from it year round. And there's some months of the year, July, August, and September, where it's like unbearably hot, like the house and your whole body just starts sweating. Like, I felt like I didn't ace here in the water. Roatan, and there's not a lot of vegetation on the island. Like, it's kind of like hot, dusty, like open to the sun, not a lot of trees. Roatan, what I find so stunning, especially about it, is it's like all jungle. So the entire center of the island, jungle, like we're on the main, like a rainforest. And then on the outskirts of it is all the, but to keep this green, it requires a lot of rain. So there's a true, like, more rainy season here during the winter months, which I think might be like, I would say it's like October, November-ish, pretty rainy this year. When I was here, I was not really prepared for it with how rainy it was. So it feels like you are kind of inside during a true winter than I was in Belize, so there's definitely like a true rainy.
Good to know. Don't go in like December planning to get your sunbathe on.
I don't know. That's hard to say though, because it's so varying. Like, because we had beautiful weather in December as well. And you went to Guanaja and spent 5 days there and like, we're at the beach during December. But then there were other weekends in December where it rained. So it's just kind of, it's much like Caribbean rain, right? Where it's like flash rains and then,
yeah,
but it's still warm out. It's, none of the months have been like solid rain, you know, house. So it's still like moments of breakthrough sun. But yeah, it's heavier rains. It's kind of hard to say like good weather. It just might be a little bit more of like a risk in terms of it raining your whole day.
Okay, good to know. Yeah, I think that's important, because like there's other like island places around the world where, you know, they say like, I mean, it's pretty much just going to rain for like 2 months during their rainy season. And it's not really like enjoyable to be there. But if you just get, you know, it's all relative. If you're just getting more rain, then, you know, that could actually be a nice relief. That's good. I was actually curious to ask you also, is there... Like, what was the immigration process like to Honduras? And were you aided in that at all by having been in Belize?
I don't think so. I don't think being in Belize had anything to do with it. But it's different here. Like, you're only allowed to stay 90 days and then they won't come back in. I'm like just a wild person where that didn't really affect me, because for this first year here, because I bop around so much. So like my first couple, 6 months here, I had to go back to Belize to like, you know, sell everything, bow. And so I was leaving the country every 3 months. And then it's just kind of naturally that I've had a trip every 3 months, but that is winding down a little bit. And so I do have to, you know, I'm going through the resident process now, because I don't want to have to leave my house every 3 months. So yeah, similar to Belize, there's just kind of like a check the box resident process. One of those to have like a local bank account, so they deposited money for 6 months. And so I've been doing that for like the last, once I get that done, I can go through like the process of sending in all the paying.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah, that's good to know. So a couple like last minute quick questions that I have, and kind of for both countries, and then I'll let you get back your real work. Thank you so much for all the information. It's been a lot of fun. So in both countries, is there anywhere else that you would consider living? Maybe another island, or like even on the mainland?
Yeah. So I've said since being in Honduras that I think that Honduras is like one of most underrated, like untapped countries that people don't travel in. And we've spent quite a bit of time also traveling on the mainland of Honduras, which is absolutely stunning as well. Like outside of Tegucigalpa, the capital, very developed and has, you know, a lot of city culture there, is like an area that we really love called Valle de Angeles. And there's surrounding different various mountain towns that are super safe, really charming, lots of art, lots of graffiti, really beautiful place. So I love the mainland of Honduras just as much as I love the island. In Belize, the mainland is also, again, the jungle, stunning, very different than the islands. You're not going to get as much kind of, you know, amenities or development, but a lot of people swear by living in the mainland of Belize too. So it's kind of just, do you like jungle and mountain or do you like the beach, I think, is the differentiation between those two things. Because I'm definitely a girl, so I live on the islands, but I like visit. But some people, and both instances also, like the mainland of Honduras and Belize are going to be a lot more inexpensive than the islands are, and less people that's there and an expat there. So people that want like truly very inexpensive lifestyle, or, you know, they don't have a lot of money, they want to build a home, and the mainland of those countries are there.
Ah, good to know. Okay. Yeah, I didn't. I tend to think of the islands also. That's why I asked the question, because I'm like, I know there's giant, you know, relative spaces that are like, you know, people don't really talk about it as much, but I assume there was a lot there. And I also, like, you know, I mentioned that trip that I took, like when I was out on the islands in Key Caulker and then like ended up back in the mainland of Belize, like riding through, like I didn't spend much time in Belize City, so I didn't necessarily get like an awesome vibe, but I was just riding through it anyway. But then like getting out into the jungles and into the little towns and up in those mountains and stuff, I mean, it was like really, really incredible.
Yeah, it's stunning. I mean, my absolute favorite place, like my happy place in all of Belize, is Sleeping Giant Lodge outside of Belmopan on the Hummingbird Highway in the jungle. And it is so incredible. I've had people, you know, I've been there like 5 or 6 times, and I'd always post photos, and I've had a lot of friends travel there as well on their vacation. I say people need to like to truly experience Honduras and Belize. I don't think you come for a week only to the island. Like when I went to Belize for the first time, I spent 10 days and I spent 4 days in the jungle and then five or six on the island. Really like get the feeling of the country. I feel like both of them, right? You need to see the mainland and to see the island, really doing it right. But yeah, the mainland and the jungle towns of both countries, really, really beautiful. And you'll see all those crazy cool animals and plants that we don't get in the US, like the toucans and spider monkeys, howler monkeys. If you ever hear a howler monkey in person, it's very special experience, which I've heard in both countries. So yeah, just the animals alone are worth visiting the mainland.
Yeah, it'd be a shame to come to that. Like, I mean, we don't have that in the US, and, you know, most of the world doesn't. So if you're coming from anywhere else, then like you go and you just sit on the beach the whole time, like you really are missing a huge part of the story there with when you visit this part of the world. Okay, very, very helpful. And then I was also curious to ask, you mentioned like a Facebook group earlier, and I was just curious if there were any resources like that, communities, forums, any websites or anything that were like especially useful, and this could apply to either or both country, that for people that might want to kind of, you know, follow in your footsteps.
Yeah, I feel like they must have these for every country now, because I've found them in Belize and then also Honduras, and it's been life changing to be a part of them. In Belize, there's in Ambergris Facebook group called Ambergris Expats, and then in Roatan, there's one called Ask Roatan, and it's just, you know, people that are newer to the community ask like, can you recommend a vet? What's a good dentist? And I, you know, in Belize, I was really a part of the group because I'd been there for so long. Since moving to Roatan, I'm just observing, and I do a lot of searching in the group because people post and ask the same things over and over again, and members get annoyed by that. But I just, yeah, I use it as this like great resource. It's like a guide to the island. I just search everything I've ever needed. I search in the island and Roatan, someone that's asked for and will recommend. That's how I have my vet. That's how I have my dentist. Like that's how we, you know, get certain things sometimes fix at our house or like resources that we could live. And so, yeah, it's.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny how it is just mainly Facebook groups too, which I don't know why. I just kind of tend to think like maybe there's some other tools out there, but Facebook groups have been huge for my wife and I as well. Like, I mean, where we're living now, there's like Facebook, there's expats in Valencia. There's also one like Americans in Valencia. And I would get it if somebody was like, why do you need to ask just an expat community? You know, like, but there is something about that, because there's things you're going through that are just unique to the fact that you're, you know, you're a local or you're not a local. Like, I mean, for instance, we were just on it yesterday asking questions about a visa renewal process, and we're doing a different visa than we've done in the past. So we weren't quite familiar with a form, and like, yeah, you search in there and all of a sudden you've got like answers going back years. And if you need clarification, people can, you know, give you clarification. I'm always really amazed by the willingness to share. Pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, they're such a great resource, like I said, and it's just, it's so, you don't even realize some of the things that you take for granted that you know in your own, like how things are run. You know, the immigration stuff is one thing, that's whole beast, but just like pet things, you know, like it's, you want to bring your pet to another country, like importing a pet in, caring for a pet, or like just the laws that are in another country. It's really hard to learn all those new, and you want to do everything right and kind of, you know, be a good citizen of this new you're part of.
Yeah, well, 100% agree. Well, speaking of sharing and all the paying it forward, you've just done plenty of that on two different countries. So I'm forever grateful for that. It was a lot of fun for me, and I'm sure people learned a lot. I definitely did. So thank you for that. And yeah, thank you for joining. And I was wondering, if we didn't really spend like too much time talking about your business, but it sounds like an amazing place to work. I don't know if you're hiring, but regardless, I think it would be awesome if you could share like where people could follow along you personally and or the business. And we'll also put all this in the show notes.
So we are hiring a lot all year. We have a very like aggressive and high growth right now. And so we love to hire people that live across the world. And we just hired our head of people. She is an expat originally from Austin, living in Mexico. And so she runs our people culture. And so we're open to all sorts of people that live across the world and are doing what you and I do. Our name is First Page Strategies, firstpagestrategy.com. We do hire only like experts or highly knowledgeable marketers, have to be a growth marketer in one of the channels that, if you're familiar with growth marketing, you know what channels I'm talking about. And on Instagram and all of the social sites, we're same, like just at First Page Strategy on Instagram, First Page Strategy on LinkedIn. So we do have a careers page that talks about our culture. I'm super proud of our culture. We have people that have been here for years. I focus a lot on sure that we have a really wonderful remote career. And so we have a listing of all of our job openings on that page.
Wow. Fantastic. Sounds like an awesome place to work, and embracing the location independence and actually like striving to have people on your team that represent a bunch of different corners of the world and different walks of life is that's the kind of place that I was literally like seeking out. And I know a lot of people are. So that's awesome.
Cool.
Very cool. Well, all right. Thank you so much. I thoroughly enjoyed it. We'll speak again soon. All that information will be in the show notes for anybody interested. And yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for tuning in today from wherever you are in the world. Once again, I'm Chase, and this has been another episode of About Abroad. For those of you wondering how you can best support the show, I have made it super simple for you. Just go over to the show notes of the episode that you just finished listening to and click on one of the two following links. aboutabroad.com/newsletter to get our monthly newsletter, no spam, guaranteed. Or ratethispodcast.com/aboutabroad, where you can quickly and easily leave a review for the show. It's not just important to me, it also helps more wanderers just like you find us. Finally, don't forget to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice, and we will see you again next week. Thanks again. Hasta luego, amigos.